Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to the latest episode of Why Not Mint Money. I'm your host, Jash Kriplani. In today's episode, we are joined by Rahul Pal, CIO Fixed Income of Mahindra Manulife Mutual Fund, on what you should keep in mind when picking a debt mutual fund.
Welcome to Why Not Mint Money, a personal finance podcast where we help you understand basic money concepts and share strategies for you to build your wealth. So let's get started with your money journey.
Hi Rahul, welcome to the latest episode of Why Not Mint Money. It's great to have you here. So Rahul, first up, can you tell our listeners where they should be investing their money if they are looking to invest in debt schemes?
As a rule, the idea of investment is in fixed income is it a part of your asset allocation? That's one. B is how long are you intending to invest with? That is, do you need money for a short term or do you need money for a longer term? These are the two questions that you need to ask yourself. Well, fixed income as an asset class has been a very formidable ally in the wealth journey for investors. I mean, I'm talking about through a global experience. B is in terms of if you're looking for to invest for a very shorter tenor, it's safer to invest in, we have in a mutual fund, there are schemes classified as liquid, ultra and low duration, which take lesser bets on interest rate volatility. So to that extent, your volatility is hedged. Should you want to have a longer tenor of investment with a larger volatility risk, you have short-term funds and dynamic bond funds. So it's an investor's choice based on their asset allocation. B is also on the tenor of their investments and hence the volatility risk that they want to capture. It's a pure investor bias. How do they look at fixed income?
Right. But Rahul, given the current scenario, what are the various factors you see playing out and what should investors keep in mind vis-a-vis the risks that they can see across different duration and how optimally they can position themselves?
In terms of risk profiling of mutual funds, generally speaking, now SEBI has classified the risk in terms of we have the risk committers which talk about the risk. That's something that the investors should look at. But generally speaking, the two biggest risks associated with a fixed income mutual fund is one is the liquidity risk of the investment and B is the interest rate risk. And also you may add an element of credit risk. For an investor who starts off his journey, I would suggest the fact that he looks predominantly at a shorter end of the curve because that gives him an easy liquidity as well as a fairly healthy credit of the of mutual fund profiles. I mean, every investor should look at the risk profile to the risk committer, which is a fair indication of the credit risk profile of the investor. B is generally all the portfolios are liquid enough for the investor to get money on the next step possibly. And usually, so that helps the investor. And in terms of factors determining, mutual fund and fixed income mutual fund investments, a large part of the price movement of our NAV or the fixed income NAV is a function of interest rates. And the thumb rule is when interest rates fall, the NAV rises. And you can also have a carry, which is just like a coupon, there's a YTM attached to the fixed income portfolios, which is basically a weighted average coupon or a YTM of the investments in your portfolio. And that accrues to the investor as they go along in the investment journey. So those are the things that I would like to typically look at.
Right. So Rahul, moving to a more broader question, how do you see the interest rate scenario playing out right now? And what are the various factors you see influencing that?
So it's always very difficult to forecast a direction. So what we do is apply the rules of probability to the entire, to the entire thinking process. Our view is, and based on what some, based on the larger probability, we think A, the rates to stay put for some time, and generally, you know, then ease over a period of time. It's based on the broader contours of inflation. Being inflation in India, as RBI has talked about, a much benign inflation as we go through the future, that part of the inflation actually reflecting in the fixed income prices, which is when inflation really falls off or else is steady at a lower level, interest rates tend to come off. And we see that really happening probably over a period of time. So you have an advantage of a high carry to the investors and a potential capital gains when the interest rates fall or where they come off. But in terms of direction, we are generally very positive in a sense that over a period of time, since inflation and other factors across the globe will converge, wherein interest rates will see a gradual drift lower, helping the investors in their wealth journey.
Right. Can you talk about these factors a bit more, please?
So as a factor, generally speaking, the overarching factor which drives interest rates is inflation. I mean, inflation is a culmination of every other factor, from currency to the government's fiscal deficit. That's on a domestic factor. But if you have to just point down to one single factor which largely affects the direction of interest rates, it is inflation. And it's a well-established number. And today, RBI in its monetary policy always gives a sense of the direction of inflation, which is tending to be lower in India. And if you look at the way the globally things are, I mean, if I look at China as a slow growth engine, Europe faltering, and US probably on a slowdown, usually the needle points towards a lower inflation bias, which generally helps interest rates. If I were to talk about every other thing, I mean, there are a host of other factors which determine interest rates. I mean, we can talk about liquidity as a factor. We can talk about government's fiscal deficit, but all of them culminate into inflation. If you manage to have a lower inflation, it really helps interest rates.
Right.
So, I mean, if you were to have a very reductionist view of the direction of interest rates, the reductionist view is keep a tab of inflation. It reflects everything else.
Got it. And Rahul, what about potential inclusion of India in the global bond indices? How do you see that impacting the debt market? And, how does that play a role in how investors look at our debt market right now?
So, as you know, that India has got included in the the JP Morgan Global Emerging Bond Index. So we move from 1% to 10% through the year. Let me put it this way. It's good to have it. But would it be the fact that it indicates an interest rate direction? Our general thinking is no. And let's remember the fact that it is there in the index and it will find a natural flow also, an active flow. People who bet on the direction of interest rates will also try to invest because there is an index and now India is the index. But our thinking is the fact that it is one of the factors which influences the direction of the interest rates. Overarchingly, the macros have to work in your favor, predominantly inflation. We repeat, it's good to have. Let's not be overarchingly dependent as a direction interest rates linked to the foreign FPI flows. And also, let's remember the fact that, let's say, suppose tomorrow the index, the JP Morgan index decides that the limits of Asia needs to be curbed. It cannot be so large. Index India from a 10% index may actually come slightly lower, which itself has a ramification. So what we are always maintaining, great to have, let's attract more foreign money, but let's not bet on the direction of interest rates based on inclusion in the index.
Right. But immediately speaking, wouldn't, larger flows coming from foreign investors bring in more demand, and that would to some extent have an impact on how rates play out?
Ideally, it should. But let's put it this way, that at the end of the day, for every buyer, there's a seller. And today in India, it's dominated by the, as a supplier, it's dominated by the government of India as a predominant supplier, and B is, you have the other suppliers PSU banks, etc., and banking industry, which holds bulk of the government of India securities. So our assumption is that the demand, and every demand will have its own supply, that's one, because every buyer has its own seller. And more often than not, the FPIs, so there are two parts of guys who will come in. One is the ones who are taking the active bets and ones who are taking the passive bets. The passive bets are the guys who are price seekers. They would not follow the direction of interest rate. When the money comes in, they will buy irrespective of the direction of price. It's the active guys who will probably start looking much more into the macroeconomic health or the macroeconomic direction. So we believe the fact that one is a large part of it was in the news. That is, everybody knew in June end you're going to have foreign, those investments coming in. So, and people had started also moving in monies much earlier than the active guys. So what we're saying is that it was not a classical unknown event. So, and by the way, from the time from June, we had a week with after inclusion index, and we didn't see much movement in the GSEC, and also not much liquidity. And there was no liquidity spike as in most volume started getting traded. So we'll wait and watch. Yes, as I keep on repeating, directionally it is positive, but at the end of the day, the direction of interest rates is a clear function of the bets on the currency movement, be on the inflation. That is what would drive the investor allocation or the direction of the investor interest rates.
Sure. And Rahul, if you can indulge me, I wanted to also ask you about other, debt categories like banking and PSU, corporate bond funds. How should investors look at these categories? How are you positioning yourself, in that space? And what should be investors' expectations when looking at these particular categories?
So very robust categories. They're well-defined investment categories. And so generally speaking, a banking PSU debt fund and a corporate bond fund are very well-defined in terms of their asset, what assets to be the mutual fund should be buying. So that's well taken care of. And once that is taken care of, the good thing is that there's an element of a higher element of carry vis-a-vis a classical GSEC fund there or a classical dynamic bond fund there. So there's a higher element of carry, and you add an element of possible falling of interest rates. It's a good category to be investing in, and if I'm not wrong, they don't carry a larger volatility risk in terms of duration. So modest duration. With a better credit profile, and directionally, if interest rates were to come off, it's a healthy category to stay invested in.
Right. And this could also be a suitable category for first-time investors?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. They will have to ride a bit higher volatility than the classical low-duration ultra-short term. But if they have a tenor of more than a year, the volatility takes care of itself. Volatility kind of evens out as if the investment horizon goes longer. So they will probably face a higher volatility, but then that gets evened out when the investment tenor is the investor's horizon is a bit longer than a year. So to that extent, it would be better than a short-term portfolios like a low duration and ultra short.
And what about longer duration funds? You see these funds potentially seeing more volatility in the times to come?
Yes. So longer duration fund, as the name suggests, has a longer duration, which means the fact that, in mutual fund parlance, we call something like the Macaulay duration. So larger the Macaulay duration, higher the volatility. So they will have the highest volatility profile. With the highest volatility profile could also mean the highest potential return for the investor if the interest rates were to come off. So, and it also needs a nimble-footed investor. That is, it's not a product. Because today taxation is agnostic, whether you're a one-year or a three-year investor. So, in a tax-agnostic world, with a higher volatility, the investors need to be advised well, and you have to be timed well. So it's a cyclical product. Interest rates is a function of the. That product is a function of the interest rate cycle. So it needs a nimble-footed investor who can time the volatility well. It's not a very classical long-term investment product for the investor in their wealth creation journey. Or else they have to be really, really longer invested so as to take the full benefit of a potential fall in interest rate as and when happens in the long run. I'm talking about really long-term fall in interest rates, which looks difficult at this moment. So it's what we call a tactical approach to asset allocation on the fixed income side. That's something to be kept in mind.
Okay. And when you mean really long, what kind of numbers you are talking?
So you have to almost match the MACD of this. So it's a classical 7 years kind of thing. If it's in a core portfolio, I mean, globally, over 60-40 portfolio, some people follow 60-40 portfolio. That's the kind of asset allocation portfolio you need to have it.
Sure.
But it's been used as a classical tactical allocation. Come in at some point of the interest rate cycle, get in because you are tax agnostic at the moment.
Thank you, Rahul, for joining us today and sharing all those insights. Thank you, listeners, for joining us today. If you liked this episode and would like to hear two more such interesting conversations, do log into our channel, Why Not Mint Money on Spotify, as well as other platforms, where you will find me omnipresent. Also, if you have any new ideas or suggestions, you can DM me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @JashKriplani, that is JashKriplani. Or y'all can always mail to us at mintmoney@livemint.com.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a savory sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and crispy hash browns. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.